Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
The following is a presentation of the Force Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Force Center podcast feed. I'm Joseph Scrimshaw.
I'm Ken Napsok.
And this is the Clone Wars Report. Oh no, the news robot wound down.
He's busy. The news robot is busy.
Somebody put a restraining bolt on the news robot, and that just bums me out.
Wow. Hello, sir. Happy to be
here. Hello. How are you? For listeners, if they perceive anything different, we are recording in our homes, which we always record in one of our homes, yeah. But we are recording in our own homes and then talking to each other over the magic of the internet.
Yeah, the magic of the internet. So some sounds may come in and out. We were talking off air. This could not have happened. If we were locked away into our own Dagobah caves back in the day, I don't think we could have pulled this show off. So technology is here at least to make things a little easier.
Yeah, that's right. I think George Lucas would be proud.
Yes.
A little bit of advance in technology. So then we have the power to use it in all sorts of different ways. So we will use this technology to make Jar Jar step in poo poo. And it will be a revolutionary breakthrough.
Yes.
All right. Well, let's dig into this. We are here to discuss, of course, the Clone Wars. That's why it's called the Clone Wars Report. We are on the 5th episode of season 7. It is called Gone with a Trace. Now, starting with On the Wings of Kyrdax, we've been thinking about who would sing the song of the title. So do you got a band, Mr. DJ Man, who would sing Gone with the Trace?
I'm going to say this is the Go-Go's. Gone with a trace, gone with a trace, gone with a trace. We're gone with the trace.
Yeah, I like that. Who was it? Was it Brian Adams who did like a weird murder mystery song in like 87?
That seems accurate. I just know summer 69.
Was Richard Marx?
Might be. Oh,
anyway.
Who Twitter, the king of Twitter, Richard Marx. Yeah, he I think he might have too. There was probably a lot of murder story songs in the late 80s.
Yeah. It also seems to me like a perfect Go-Go song, but also like a really badly judged song about some sort of murder mystery about a person named Trace. Terrible, terrible. How did you feel, as we get into the actual episode, how did you feel that the title of this episode was just a straight up pun?
I think I liked it. I didn't. It's so funny when I was loading the episode before I watched it, I think I just mentally skipped over what it was and just was like, oh, Gone Without a Trace. That's cool. And then I read it. Look, On the Wings of Kyrdax is, I mean, they're having fun with titles this season, so I'm okay with it.
That's right. So the pun gets a pass.
Yeah.
Excellent. So what was your big picture overall reaction to Gone with a Trace starring the new character Trace?
Yeah, I got to tell you, I really like this one in the sense of here we're starting a new arc. We're not too familiar with it. I know there's some stuff of this stuff exists, the different character. They've replaced a character and added the sisters and all that kind of stuff. So I'm not familiar with that, and I'm just taking this one as it comes. And I thought this was a very classic Clone Wars episode where you know something bigger's coming. It was almost live action to me in a way, which is an interesting conversation to have around Ahsoka Tano right now. this was to me like a great opening of what I'm expecting to be a good arc.
Yeah. I really, I have not watched any of the sort of other versions of this. Is there an animatic version of this arc?
There might be a little bit of, I'm trying to think, because I was watching a little bit of Star Wars Explains channel. He had some shots up of it. I can't remember. I definitely know there was some concept art, but definitely a shot of the other character. I think his name was like Nick or Nico or something like that. And in the shop, in the droid repair shop. So something exists.
Okay, right. Yeah, because there are different conventions where Filoni shared some stuff that would have been.
Yeah.
Before this all happened. For me, I really liked the general sense of sort of confusion in transition. Like you just really got, it made you emotionally feel very well that Ahsoka really doesn't know what's next. Mm. And that all the characters that she's interacting with, Trace and Rafa, are also in that very same place of like, we are really not happy with our lives and we want to get out of here and we want something to be different. And I think that adds to what Filoni is doing really well with this season is these are not just a bunch of stories that happen to happen toward the end of Clone Wars. Mm. Everything has that mood of slight bit of doom, of this is all coming to an end and where it's going is a little bit inevitable. So when you hear characters talk about, let's just get away from the Clone Wars and get away from all of this into some happier, better place, there's that bittersweet, okay, well, the Clone Wars are going to end, but you're not going to like what's going to come next.
Ooh, yeah. Be careful choosing door number two. And I like, we're obviously going to dive into the sisters, but their journey is a very Star Wars journey, starting point at least, right? Two people in a situation they don't want to be in or can't change, and they're dreaming and working towards it. And I thought that was a nice, just from an overall point of view of like, their Star Wars story is just as valid as someone swinging a lightsaber.
Yeah, exactly. A lot of it had that feeling of Luke Skywalker staring at the twin suns, even though it wasn't literally that, except for that one Ahsoka shot. But we'll talk about that. some of the other big picture reactions for me was just how great it was to see Ahsoka again, but to see her in such a different place. Obviously, that place of transition, but it made her moments of action so like fist pumping and heroic for me to see that this was the Ahsoka who feels betrayed. Mm. As they said, you know, first word of the episode is betrayal. Mm. So she's confused and trying to figure it all out. But then we also know that she is so experienced, so knowledgeable, so well-trained, has so many skills. So even though we're seeing her in a confused, dark place, when she does act, it's just so fist-pumping and so F yeah, Ahsoka, she is strong and a badass and a force to be reckoned with.
And it comes from such a wonderful, pure point. Some of the most Jedi-like actions I think we've ever seen done in a droid repair shop.
Yes, that would have been an alternate title, being a Jedi in a droid repair shop. My other big thing that I liked from this that I just wanted to shout out and ask if you picked up on is the old Kenner action figure in the background.
Yeah, I got to say, it's one of my favorite things in the episode. And I didn't watch this episode actually till Sunday.
Okay.
No real reason. I've just kind of been not on Twitter and social media as much right now. And so I just didn't feel I was going to be spoiled. And so this wasn't a spoiler, because if he's listening, he's going to feel bad. But our good friend Brian Ward, I think it was the first I saw, he posted a picture. It might have been in our Discord server. And it had those figures up looking over what is the little forklift falling over. And I just loved it. So it wasn't a spoiler to me. I was actually glad to see it, because then I really got to focus on them showing up in the show. And I loved it.
Yeah, it was so great. Yeah, I am sure everybody who is, deep into Star Wars social media, I'm sure has seen other people posting or talking about it. But if you have no idea what we're talking about, there were the four cantina aliens in the original Kenner line back in the day. And they had, the weird names and the incredibly bright costumes that didn't really have a relationship with the reality of the film.
and good boots.
Yeah. Yeah, we got your Walrus Man, your bright green Greedo. You've got your Hammerhead with a blue onesie, and then you have Snaggletooth in different variations. This was the tall blue onesie, blue jumper Snaggletooth. But yeah, it was really fun for me. I saw it. I stayed up late on Thursday night and I watched it. And because Walrus Man's colors are so bright, I saw Walrus Man because he pops up a couple times. He's in the traffic in the beginning,
right?
And then he's watching the forklift. And then I rewatched it this morning to get ready for our discussion and noticed that they popped up everywhere and that they're in the specific shots together. And it was just one of those, it just felt great to be a Star Wars nerd. And honestly, being a Star Wars nerd of that specific generation, it felt great to be pandered to by the Clone Wars.
I think Filoni is great at pandering to the Kenner generation. he's done it time and time again in anything he's involved in. And you know what? As he should, because it's part of the lifeblood of Star Wars.
That is exactly right. So let's get into the big theme. So the big sort of original Lucas theme that jumped out to me is helping other people, which sounds kind of simplistic, but I think it's about this idea of empathy, about symbiosis. It's a lot of what we've talked about Shmi's wisdom in The Phantom Menace, saying that, people need to help each other. That's how the galaxy works. That's what makes the galaxy better, is if you actually help people. Did that jump out to you?
It really did, and my favorite moment was the little exchange, Ahsoka saying, "Why are you helping me?" and Trey saying, "Shouldn't I?" It was so well delivered in terms of voice performance, writing, animation. It was, that's when I said earlier, like, hey, this is almost like a live action episode. It just jumped off the screen for me, and I actually, the first time I saw it, I laughed. I was having a bowl of oatmeal, drinking coffee on a Sunday morning, and I actually just laughed out loud, because There's no cynicism in Trace's response, and this character has every reason to be cynical, right? And she is in some other areas, but she's just like, yeah, shouldn't I? Like, what a pure approach to it. And it's almost like little Annie. You mentioned Shmi. It's almost like Annie, like, yeah, no, we should help. I really love them.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that comparison directly to Anakin is great, because I think what I really liked about Trace is she is like, little slave orphan Annie, not orphan, eventually. Anyway, little Annie, that both Annie and Trace are very aware of the harsh reality that they live in, but clearly have this pull to overcome it with kindness and with empathy. Like, I love how much Trace keeps saying, well, everything has a price. Oh, you don't have many credits. That's fine. I'll still help you. And it's clearly wants Ahsoka there is intrigued by Ahsoka, really wants to help her and wants to be her friend.
Yeah. Yeah. Really needs it. Really craves it. Really picks up on stuff right away. And I love, of course, Ahsoka will be starting from "Why are you helping me?" She's just been betrayed, as you said, by everyone she cares about in her eyes. It's just a great little sequence.
Yeah. And I like that idea that Ahsoka really expects that I am on my own, and that's what she's internalized. So the idea that I would happen to crash land in front of somebody who is telling me I have to pay for stuff, but is being very, very helpful and kind about it must jar her from the perspective of like, how am I going to make it on my own? Because I'm on my own now. And so to immediately find some kind of companionship is, you know, got to restore Ahsoka's faith a little bit.
Absolutely.
So then, I feel like this theme continues when Ahsoka continues to choose to help Trace in lots of different ways. We'll talk about the fight. I agree with you. That's it's such a great Jedi moment in the fight in the droid shop. But yeah. Ahsoka's right there wanting to reciprocate, wanting to help. I think kind of putting herself a little bit at risk, showing her force powers to help. But it's just, to me, it's it's the symbiote circle, right? Mm. Not that Ahsoka probably wouldn't have helped Trace anyway, because she is a good person, but just seeing that cycle actually flow through in this one episode was really cool and powerful.
Yeah, I like that. I like what you're saying there. Ahsoka helping her in many ways, shapes, and forms, which is more in line with her character than her Jedi status or lack thereof, of course, as we know, but her upbringing.
Yeah, yeah. I wanted to ask you specifically, under this general umbrella of empathy and symbiosis and Shmi's wisdom, so Trace keeps saying there's kind of a lot of back and forth, actually, about everything has a price. And is Ahsoka going to pay for the tools or the parts, or is she going to pay rent, or is she not going to pay rent, and who's going to pay who for what for the droids? There's a lot about everything has a price down here. Did you take that as an overall negative or positive statement?
I took it as a realistic statement when you talk about down there. And you can talk about, you know, the economy of it all and paying for the goods and services and all those kind of conversations. But there's something about just the world they live in where they have to know that everything has a price, and everything's going to not just a monetary price, but an action, a reaction. And you have to, the consequences maybe for what you do, or achievements and successes and improving your quality of life down there in 1313. There's a lot of this level 13, you know, it's a fun reference, but I really dive into it. So as far as positive or negative, I think you could go both ways. And it's definitely negative connotation many times in this episode, but I think it's also just how they have to live. They have to be aware of it. Everything we do costs something.
Yeah, no, I'm totally on. I was really curious if it landed with you the same way it landed with me, where at the beginning, it sounds like Ahsoka's like, well, I'm not going to use the money. Who knows how Ahsoka even got these credits, that the meager credits she has, which is a fun conversation. But then it does seem to slowly slide into, because it is about symbiosis, and every action you take has a reaction, positive or negative, that everything has a price. Does start to sound like a part of the very Star Wars idea we've been talking about a lot lately, of everyone and everything is connected. So if you take an action at all, it's going to affect somebody else.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
So
there's fine. There's our first remote. I can't see your beautiful eyes. Pause.
I have a picture of your eyes up on my computer. It's creepy. You're hypnotizing me. But yeah, so let's move on to I think the other big theme for me, which was just same thing as last week in a way, was looking at the nature of the Jedi. But this was a really different look at the nature of the Jedi. But I felt like that was a big main theme. Did that pop out to you as well?
Oh, very much so. This is Ahsoka Tano, right? This is what we keep talking about. She went off on her own path to discover herself. Obviously, the theme of an episode that's in the title or in the moral at the beginning. But even it's so fresh, and it's just running around her mind. And to have we're going to talk about the lesson, the Trace actually just being like, Jedi. I thought it was one of the more thoughtful, thought-inducing lessons for us as fans about what are the Jedi and what we want out of the Jedi, even as fans.
Yeah, yeah. I thought what was really cool about it is that it has those crystal clear, on-the-nose bits of dialogue with Trace and Ahsoka discussing who the Jedi are and what they do and whether or not they're responsible for the Clone Wars. So obviously, it really sets you off to think about the Jedi, and I think anybody following the Clone Wars are thinking about, well, Ahsoka just feels like she was betrayed by the Jedi, and I think most viewers feel like she was at least let down by the Jedi. So you're already thinking, what is Ahsoka thinking about the Jedi? So I love that there's these kind of crystal clear on the surface things, but then there's so much going on that is just, if you're a fan of Jedi philosophy and you follow it, that it's there in Ahsoka's actions and choices as well.
Very much. This to me is a lot of sequences in this just ring true to me as a fan, and much like that scene we always talk about in Battlefront 2, the Pileo level. I mean, it's just somebody's this base level. Here's what it kind of is to be a Jedi, or how Jedi should act, or what you think. You know, not in terms of guidelines or an instruction manual, but just like the emotional core of what it is to be a Jedi out in this world.
Yeah, exactly. So let's dig in. We'll dig into it a little bit here, and then a little bit as we walk through the actual episode. But how did you take the revelation from Trace that her perception, and she, I think, is being kind of a symbol of the people down in 1313, that the Jedi started the war, and that the Jedi don't care about or protect the little people anymore?
It's interesting because, you know, if you're kind of in the story as a viewer, you're like, you are wrong. And there might be some truth to that. You know, we know a little bit more what's going on. We know the dark forces behind this, but Trace doesn't know. And quite frankly, doesn't care nor need to care about Count Dooku and Palpatine. This is how it trickles down. And this idea that she says they've forgotten all about us, that's not necessarily wrong. You could argue the Jedi are fighting the big fight to protect them, but you're way down here. They're not down there. There's no Jedi patrolling the streets of 1313. And I love when she says, when you're a kid, you hear stories, I guess they're not what I thought they'd be. And there's some real resignation, some real disappointment, some real sadness in there. To me, that had to be just a dagger in Ahsoka's heart, because she knows it's true. Because guess what? They same. Ahsoka could just go same.
Exactly. Yeah, I loved it from Ahsoka's perspective, that we continue to get these little drops where, to me, we are being reminded that the Jedi think of their involvement in the Clone Wars as an extension of defense, where, because Ahsoka says, no, we didn't start it. We're trying to stop it. Mm. And from everybody else's perspective, it's like, I don't know, some Jedi and some droids fought all over my planet and it's destroyed. Didn't look like defense to me. But from Ahsoka wanting to hold on to that perspective, that's what it might be in the Jedi's minds and from the Jedi's perspective, but that's not the reality that people are facing, and kind of having to be really immediately have that idea removed from her mind was really interesting.
I love this idea. You've brought it up a lot of this, you know, Ahsoka is this reflection of what the Jedi could be, should be, what they used to be, and how far they've removed. And we also like to defend the Jedi, you know, particularly you're the type of guy, if you walk in a gift shop, you are going to go towards the Jedi items first. So I love this idea that Ahsoka's hearing this and it's the truth, but there's got to be a tinge of hope. Of we can get back to that, or now I can get back to that, and I can be a little bit more, not in this heroic thing. I think it is no fault of the Jedi that they can't be down there at 1313 right now, but no one's stopping to think about it. And so now it's being put in her face, and that changes your perspective. So I always say, if it's not in front of you, you don't feel it, you know? And that's just kind of, unfortunately, how a lot of things happen in life. And here it is, Ahsoka, and she's feeling it.
Yeah. And I think Ahsoka also, I mean, obviously we know that she has been down to the lower levels before. We've seen her there in the Clone Wars.
Correct.
But I think with her fresh, like, oh man, the Jedi are falling down on even what they claim they want to do and want to be, that it must be powerful for her to go like, oh yeah, the Jedi are just literally sitting on top of all this poverty.
Yes.
you know, they're trying to do their part by ending the Clone Wars. The Clone Wars, you know, as we've learned in some of those great Padme political episodes, the Clone Wars are causing some of these poverty issues. Mm-hmm. But that idea, like, these people are suffering literally below us. And what are we doing?
Mm. Yeah. So right there.
Yeah. Yep. So there's that the interesting push-pull to me between, like, should the Jedi be addressing big things like systemic issues of poverty or fighting wars versus should they be helping day-to-day people? And I think that, to me, was maybe the most powerful Jedi idea, because you and I have talked about, well, it's not like like Ahsoka rejects the Jedi teachings. It's that she feels they aren't reflecting them right now.
Mm-hmm.
And then to see this episode where she kind of just goes and does what the Jedi claim to be, what I think a lot of people our age and Filoni's age imagined the Jedi to be, is she's just wandering through life, encounters somebody with a problem, they ask for help, and so with her great power, she helps.
Mm. It is, in a weird way, because I'm not saying this is exactly what it's going to be, in a weird way, it was a little bit of a ting of excitement for the High Republic series coming, where it's going to be bigger than this, but to break it down to a lower, smaller micro level, like, oh, okay, we're going to see the Jedi doing this, and that's what it means for the Jedis to be kind of at the height of their full powers, to me. So I actually was thinking about that during some of these sequences.
Oh, really? Really? You're looking forward to more noble Jedi standing up for innocent citizens in droid shops?
Yes, that's the book I want. The droid shop battles. Well, you know, just seeing it on that, seeing it just plain and simply on that level. Because again, Jedi fighting and leading in the war was not something I necessarily questioned in 2002. And I still think you and I talk off. We talked on the main show recently about justice for the Jedi. I don't necessarily think it was wrong. And I think that's not necessarily the point of what George was saying, or, you know, there's a lot of points George was saying in this, but to just see, my point being to see Ahsoka on this level going, oh yeah. We got away from this where there's thugs causing problems and they're causing problems because no one's down there. food for thought.
Yeah. It struck me really powerfully also that Ahsoka seems to be in this balance where she doesn't want to tell people that she's a Jedi or she was a Jedi Padawan. You know, she kind of hedges on that. She uses the Force only when she absolutely has to at the end. And yet she is doing this very Jedi thing of, wait in that droid shop waiting to be asked. Mm. I mean, you get the sense that maybe she right away is kind of spunky, definitely Anakin's Padawan. As soon as Pintu in his thugs come in, she's like, you know, I can't remember exactly what she says, but like, you don't want to do that. Yeah. Very threatening. And both parties tell her to stay out of it. And then, you know, she actually listens. And I was just really affected by, we get to see a long scene of Trace getting punched, and Ahsoka's not doing anything until asked. Mm. And that seems so Jedi-like to me.
Yeah. And again, not that it's a step-by-step instructional manual. It's just, this is to put a finer point on it kind of moment. This is just seeing how it generally works this in spirit, like the spiritual side of this to me. Ahsoka could have destroyed everyone in 2 seconds if she wanted, but I don't know. Yeah, it's a risk to reveal, number one. She's got to be careful with that. But anyways, I could go off. I just like that little moment because look on the face. The animation's so good. Ahsoka's like, say it. All right, great, I can kick ass. And as kids, we focus on the ass-kicking scene, which we can talk about in detail. You know, that's what we want. That's what a Jedi is. And this is kind of reminding, no, here's the reason for it, and here's how it comes to be.
Right. She's not craving action or adventure. She will kick ass and other body parts when asked.
Yoinks.
Which we will get into them body parts. So let's talk the moral of the episode. If there's no path before you, create your own. What did you get out of that in relationship to the actual episode and, you know, to getting a tattoo on your back? that important to you?
It's not. I don't have any tats, man. I'm not cool like that. The two sides or several sides to this moral. The easy one here is, you know, especially as it starts and it starts, that pops up and then we go to Ahsoka. That's what she did by choosing to walk away from the Jedi Order, right? So that's the big picture one. But I like, though, that she has this line. She says, I don't know what I'm doing here. And that means you still have to find that path and still have to create it. And it's not easy. But also, I really love how this applies to Trace and Rafa. But Trace saying she wants to head to the stars with her sister, which is a very Star Wars thing, right? I want to fly. Yeah. I want to be a pilot. I want to be a driver, a winner. But here is... There is no path before them down here. There is no life to be had, no good life, and they want that fresh air, so they know they have to get it. And I think it applies maybe even more to them, just as if not more than Ahsoka. You know what I mean? Like it was pretty powerful for me to attach it to them.
Yeah. I felt in a really great way, sort of hoodwinked by it in a positive way, where it comes up on the screen, and you know this is the episode where we're gonna catch up with Ahsoka after her betrayal. And of course, it sounds like if there's no path before you create your own, that it's all about Ahsoka, and it feels that way at the beginning of the episode when Ahsoka is literally like, "Well, I'm just gonna take my speeder to a lower level, and I can't even." Do that right. So I don't know what the hell I'm doing. I don't know where I'm going. But then it is more powerfully, I think, about those sisters. I totally agree with you that they're really like, they're literally, it's not like we're choosing between our paths. We didn't reject one path like Ahsoka. It's like we literally, there is no path before us. So we have to figure something out or we just, you know, die.
Yeah.
Terrible.
Star Wars is so much about destiny. You and I talk about the destiny. This week on the main show, we'll be talking about Kylo Ren and his destiny a lot. But I think these are two characters that were born without a destiny present for them. You know, they had to search and find it. And it's small. It's opening a business. It's getting off world. And I think that is nice. It's nice to see those kind of Star Wars tropes now be applied in this sense to the smaller folk down below.
Yeah. And I like the discussions toward the end, too, where it kind of ties up with that idea of every action you take has a reaction, where the path they're trying to create a path that doesn't that gets them what they need, but doesn't hurt other people. You know, there's some discussion about, well, what are we going to those droids are dangerous to other people, but we need that money. We need a path forward. So I thought that was a great contrast as well. The other thing about this moral that really grabbed me is. And again, this might be just me kind of crawling into my own interpretation of Ahsoka and the Jedi a bunch. But starting the episode thinking this is about Ahsoka, if there's no path before you create your own. And then in actively watching the episode, I feel like, well, Ahsoka's still on the same path. She's actually just doing the Jedi path. She's being the Jedi that Trace heard about when she was a kid. She is following the Jedi path in a way that even with their good intentions, maybe the Jedi aren't right now.
Yeah. I like
so
that.
So I thought, Yeah, I thought that was, to me, it's interesting to think about where the rest of this arc is going. Is Ahsoka going to feel like, I found my new path and here's how I define it. Or is she going to come back to like, oh, well, I can keep being the idea of a Jedi without actually claiming the title or the rank.
Yeah, I love that. It goes on. So one of my favorite things about Ahsoka and where she is and what she becomes, as far as we know, just it isn't necessarily a new path. It's her path, you know, and it's like this doubling down on. Yeah. This I know what I was supposed to do. I got knocked off of it. I'm back on it. I love that.
Yeah. And in some ways it's not. It might be a confusing path, but at the same time, it's just, hey, does somebody in front of me need help? Do they want my help? OK, I help.
Yeah.
And when you look at it that way, it feels simpler than I'm sure it actually is for poor Ahsoka right then. Yeah. Let's talk about action. Clone Wars episodes always have a lot of action. There wasn't as much action in this one. There were more scenes of financial negotiation and laundromats and things like that. But what were your favorite action moments?
I got to tell you, it wasn't. I mean, there's some good fighting here. There's some good hand to hand. There's some good chasing. There's all those kind of things. But I got to tell you, that binary load lifter running around like a dog after a bath, and the one moment where I think Rafa's looking and there's like all the Lothcats are scurrying about and it comes swinging around the corner and does like a comical whoop, 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 whoop and knocks something. I again laughed. And, you know, if you ever trying to give a Chihuahua a bath, I can tell you this is what they do.
Yeah, I really liked the moment. I liked the danger of the binary load lifters that they were just sort of crosswired, which, again, we will talk more about, in that it was just kind of on a rampage of destruction for no particular reason. I liked it when that particular beat when it just ripped a sign off a business and threw it into a speeder.
Yes.
For no reason whatsoever.
For no reason.
It was very cathartic. Yeah. It was sort of like, that's the kind of CrossFit I would like to do. Just smash things in public.
Beautiful.
Wouldn't actually do it. But my favorite action moment, though, was Ahsoka catching that robot fist punch. And the look on her face was just so triumphant. So we up to that point, Ahsoka has felt lost and like, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm trying to figure this out. But as soon as she is actually asked to step in and help, there is so much confidence and so much power in that look on her face when she catches that fist, and you know that these people are in such trouble.
You've done it.
So Ahsoka catching that fist, definitely favorite action moment. So we are going to take a little break, and then we will be back to look at all of the details of the scenes of this episode of Clone Wars.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
And we are back to discuss Gone with a Trace, a title that it is almost hard for me to say correctly. I keep wanting to say Gone Without a Trace, but we are Gone with a Trace, the character Trace. So, Ken, let's dive in as we've been doing and talk about kind of the individual scenes and beats and ideas. So we start with Ahsoka's speeder bike falling apart and her having a lengthy fall down into a literal hole. What did it make you think of?
Well, so we don't quite know the length of time, right? And I think I saw something online. I think someone was tweeting Matt Martin, a barrage of canon questions. And he said something about, I don't know, it's like a few days after or something like that. So I don't think the answer is official by any sense of the word. But I got a sense it was really long because this scene, we've seen this scene before. I think this was revealed at Star Wars Celebration. We've seen some of these character designs. But I was watching, here we got Ahsoka. In a blue denim jumpsuit on a hog, man. She's on a hog. And I was like, this is 1971. Like, if the prequels are the 50s, like, she's in the 70s. She's listening to some California sound and cruising along to some Easy Rider stuff going on here. So I really like the sequence because, again, seeing that this was a sequence we had seen, I thought I just – would not think this would be the first time we saw her. So I was like, this is a great start for me.
Yeah. Yeah. I loved Ahsoka's look, and I like the tradition in Clone Wars in particular. It seems like they just made the choice that Alderaanian fashion is 1976. so it made me wonder, did she get that jeans jumpsuit from some Alderaanian source?
I love that idea. Or that this somehow, like, Padme was like, look, I probably can't wear a lot of this stuff. Anything fit for you? Because I'd love to be walking around in this, but you take it.
I had this for casual weekends, but I never have a casual weekend, so it is absolutely yours, Ahsoka. Yeah, I got the sense that a little bit of time passed because I don't know if Jedi have walking around money. I don't know where she got those credits. She clearly got that speeder from somewhere and, had a fashion change in her. Her lightsabers are somewhere.
Yeah. And this goes to, I always mention, we talk a lot about here, one of the underrated comedy things in Star Wars is that Palpatine had all the outfits for the Empire picked out already. I do love the idea of Ahsoka buying the bike, switching into this. Like, I think there's some fun reality there to be played around with. Absolutely. In our headcanon.
Yeah, headcanon for now. Hopefully short story where she does go to whatever weird Coruscant Harley shop that's run by some guy with a very 70s mustache.
There's some Linda Ronstadt playing in the background.
Absolutely, absolutely. Great look. But then for me, it was just this opening scene was powerful, even though I saw it before. And I think, when we saw it, I was like, cool. Let's get to what's next. What's the big story with Ahsoka? But then when I was just watching it in this episode, the simple power of this is just literally how she feels. She is descending into the dark, into the unknown. And the simplest thing is now a problem of just, hey, this speeder's falling apart, and even that sense of just, just that great sense of I am out of place because she's just trying to go about her business. She doesn't want to talk about being a Jedi, doesn't really want to be seen or known. And then just running into traffic, running into those Kenner action figures, knocking radar dishes down. You hear all the people going, hey, watch it. And it was just so relatable.
You're saying some great stuff here because of the power of showing the character and what's inside the character through just these little simple action scenes, right? It's a base, if you're doing your writing right, this is what it should be there in every scene. And I fail at that all the time, but to see it, to see it plain and simple, to see that not too long ago, weeks, months, you know, whatever it is, I'm not concerned about the time, but she is where she is right now. Knowing that just a short time ago, she could have done a triple force leap out, pulled the speeder up, saved herself, saved people around, whatever. She can't. She can't for so many different reasons, and to spiral out of control and fall and not be able to stop yourself, which is what is happening. And like you said, what she's feeling. She's got to be feeling this. Like, yeah, I walked away. What a powerful choice it was. Oh, now I'm on a motorcycle falling. It does really work as an opening scene. It's like this and Karen Allen in Raiders of the Lost Ark as Marion Ravenwood. These are great scenes about who these characters are.
Yeah. Yeah. So I loved it from that perspective of the literal imagery, but also just, this is one of my favorite forms of comedy. And I think my favorite forms of storytelling. We talked about it a little bit with some of the Mando stuff too, I find it so relatable when you see awesome kick-ass action heroes feeling like they're in a kind of situation where they're running late for work and the printer doesn't work and they drop their keys in the toilet, and it just like, it feels so real world of just like, I'm just trying to get from point A to point B and every damn little thing is going wrong. And I just personally love those kind of scenes.
Is it like McCartney and his part of Day in the Life? Like, woke up, got out of bed, ran a comb through my head. Yeah, absolutely.
Ran into Walrus Man on a speeder. Yeah, exactly. That kind of song. So then we move along to Ahsoka actually meeting Trace Martez. And Ahsoka bonds with her as they work on repairing the bike and Trace's ship. And then we find out that Trace and her sister Rafa want to get away from the Jedi and Coruscant too, and all that. I wanted to dive a little bit more into some of the Jedi specifics. But first, I just wanted to get your take on anything else in that specific set of scenes really jump out at you?
In terms of meeting Trace, I'll tell you, there's some bigger stuff for me. It was a nice little sequence, fun sequence. I like these two new characters, Trace and Rafa. I love the design on them. And obviously very, I think, very modern design. If they're replacing a character with these two characters, I think it was a great choice to just kind of put some new characters out there. But I was blown away by just life on 1313. And I don't know if you want to discuss it now or how it relates to this. But it was really interesting to me.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I'd say go for it. What about life on 1313 grabbed you?
I think we've heard this fabled level in Star Wars for a long time, whether it was going to be a video game that we didn't get to play or a live-action TV show that never came to be. And then we see it a lot. You mentioned up top Ahsoka and Asajj, and this idea of 1313 can be there's some hero worship of this level from the fans. And that's where the bounty hunters go to be cool. Dark things happen. And then, ooh, the Jedi, you need to hide. You got to go down there. No one will find you there. And that's all great stuff because it's true. It's definitely part of the legend of 1313. But to see it, you know, this is Fleabottom in King's Landing in Game of Thrones. This is the forgotten part of the land that the heroes are trying to defend. It's all that stuff we talked about up top. But to see it, like, I never thought of it in the sense of, this is their life, and yeah, I guess you can just fly up, go for a spin, and get that fresh air, but really, this is a separate world, and you can't leave it. It's not easy to leave it, and I got that as a longtime fan who's, you know, will be drunk at parties and go, oh, yeah, that's called 1313. You know, like, it's some cult fan club for this magical bounty hunter level in Coruscant, but here's what it actually is if you're into the story. You're engaging with Star Wars on that level. And I personally was moved by it in a way, in the sense of, you know, I have sympathy for and concern for what these sisters are going through and have been going through as characters in the story. But you know what I mean? Where I was just like, oh, yeah, this is a great way to really go into what this world means, what this level means that we all know and love.
Yeah. Oh, man, I think that's really, really well said. It makes me think about, you know, all the great things that Star Wars can be, from just this sort of romance and fun and high adventure of a Jedi and a bounty hunter fighting, to, no, these are the actual people.
Yeah.
To the, like, this is why all of these tales of heroism and what is your philosophy as a hero, this is why they matter, because they affect real people just trying to get by. And you're right, there's this great contrast between 1313. Oh yeah, it's one thing for Ahsoka to just bounce down there, maybe kick Cad Bane's ass in a cool fight, and then go back up to her business on top side. Yeah. It's different to see, let's take away a little bit of the romance and the fighting, and these are just people desperately trying to get out of this place.
Absolutely. It's very cool. Just think of Boba Fett going down there and having a video game. I all for it, all for it. And this doesn't take anything away from that, but it adds so much more realism to this greatest saga ever told thing that we love to celebrate. And I really appreciated them doing it.
Yeah, yeah. And one of the things in this sequence that I really loved is when Ahsoka got frustrated and went out to the platform and kind of watched that larger ship take off and get out of there. And you got that great sense of Ahsoka maybe longing for her old life. More for me, I got the sense of her seeing her old life from a new perspective, of seeing that, like, yeah, I would normally be on that nicer ship, that kind of Republic looking ship, yeah, that's taking off and going out of here and going off to some other adventure. And it felt to me like a really different take on the classic Luke Skywalker twin sons, where it wasn't so much longing for adventure, is almost reflecting on her past life of being a little bit more adventurous. And now she is down a little bit more in the real world.
I love that take on that. I love that. I would even button a little bit of just like, am I ever going to get that life again? What path am I on? Who, you know, what's the cost? We talked about the cost. But great moment. Yeah. What, that worthy of a poster in its own right, right? Ahsoka stares up.
Yeah. Ahsoka stares at the brightness above her. Let's dive in a little bit more details. We talked already about the conversation about the Jedi being responsible for the Clone Wars or not. There are a couple bits of dialogue that I wanted to get your take on. The idea that they're busy, Trace says the Jedi are busy policing everything. What did you take from that?
Whew. I took a little bit of truth, a little bit of, not misinformation, but it's perspective, it's point of view. So she's not wrong from her point of view. We know a little bit more. I think I can have some sympathy for the Jedi here in this situation. Again, them leading armies might not have been the right thing to do, but it's what they felt they had to do, and you have to sometimes make those choices. It's also, it's bad PR, man. And it also speaks a little bit to maybe why it would be so easy for Palpatine to spin that tail. He's already knows this is going on, and not down to this small level. He's maybe not aware of Trace, but he knows around the galaxy, especially on Coruscant, they've already got this negative point of view, and I can just go in there and I can massage that a little bit more. So now this 19 years or so between Sith and New Hope, why did the Jedi become legends? Why were they erased? Here's some of the examples of why in story it could just be so easily. If someone's already thinking, oh, they're going around policing, they're sticking their nose where they don't belong. I'm not asking for help, again, tied to what you've already talked about and what we're going to dive in. That's an interesting point of view. Easy to be manipulated, because she's not necessarily wrong.
Yeah, yeah. I just really was intrigued by that particular turn of phrase of policing everything, because it made me think of Anakin in the Outlander Club in Attack of the Clones, you know, right, shouting Jedi business, which was, I remember lots of fans discussing at the time of like, well, I thought the Jedi were these kind of mystical monk warriors, not like beat cops who are to come in and make an arrest and yell at people to go back to their drinks, you know?
I think that's... The Outlander Club sequence is underrated. I do love the opening to Attack the Clones for a lot of things. I mean, the way Anakin says it there, I mean, not to spin off into an Attack the Clones review here, but the way Anakin says it there, just imagine if you don't know what's going on. This is why, how you communicate and how you get the words out. And I've made incorrect choices in these situations, and I've made correct choices in situations. But like, how you get the word out, how you deliver what you got to do. You may have to do this. How do you deliver the information and deliver the word on how to do it is so key. So it all that boils down to what you're talking about here. Of course, Trace is going to think that.
Yeah. Jedi PR issues. I really like that. The other one that I wanted to be sure to spend a little bit of time on is Trace saying, you know, about the Jedi. You hear stories when you're a kid in this idea that the reality of the Jedi as they are during the prequel era, during the Clone Wars era, doesn't live up to this romantic notion that she had when she heard stories of them as a kid. Now, we could dive into that, into the actual world of the Clone Wars. But what I really want to ask you is, does that feel meta? Does that feel to you like that is Filoni saying, hey, yeah, look, people who grew up with the original trilogy had this kind of notion of them as described by Obi-Wan in A New Hope. But then when we meet them in the prequels, they're a little bit more rigid. They're a little bit more of an organization.
Yeah, I think it is. And it's not a... It's not to say anyone's thoughts about it growing up are wrong. I just think, you know, when you think of the Jedi and you put a lightsaber in your hand as a kid, you're hacking and slashing and you're killing the bad guys, the bad team there. You're not thinking about why. And I love that George was like, I am telling you, for better or worse, and a lot of people will say worse, but for a better or worse, George comes at us in 99, 2002 and 2005 and says, here's how it all fell. And they needed to fall. How did they fall? I'm answering my own question. And it is on these little small levels, which is a death by a thousand little knives, little cuts is what George was kind of saying. So I think Filoni's so in tune to that. He is kind of saying, Here's why maybe what, because we know Filoni loves that prequel. We've heard Favreau say, I don't like the prequels, but after you hang out with Dave, he kind of makes you like them. So, yeah, I think there's some commenting here that's outside the story.
Yeah, yeah. And to me, it was hard not to feel the meta-ness of it, but it didn't come across as criticism of any era of Star Wars. To me, it felt like this idea of, yeah, you want to strive toward the romance. You want your heroes to be, you know, knights in shining armor. But sometimes it's not that easy. One of the reasons that I like defending the Jedi of this era. I feel like they have good intentions. They're just making mistakes. It's complicated and they can't figure out the right way to just be those knights in shining armor that they want to be. And I kind of like putting that in perspective of somebody who's just on the ground, who just sees a Jedi every once in a while when they arrest a bounty hunter and cut some limbs off and leave, that the perspective would be, but I thought they were this great hope. I thought they were this. And then she sees, well, but they're just beings with power and they're trying their best to find their way. And it sits in this really interesting place that Star Wars storytelling is at right now, that there's this great tension between the fantasy and the reality of it.
I just love that this episode can inspire that kind of thought and plug into the bigger picture. It's way more than just, two plucky characters finding their way down in a lower level. It's way more than that. It should, because Star Wars is that fine ecosystem of storytelling. And I like those conversations. I love that you've led the Force Center conversations recently into this Justice for the Jedi conversation, because it can get lost when you're starting to dive into the mistakes of the Jedi, the sins of the Jedi, our favorite word, the hubris. It's because that's all right. It's all correct. But at the end of the day, there was still some good in them. and I love to talk about it. And I love that's that. Right. I love that Ahsoka, who has just left them, gets to see this, and what can I do to make it better for these individuals as a Jedi like thing, you know?
Yeah, yeah. How can I be a Jedi-like thing? Well, let's go from the dizzying heights of the nobility and reality of the Jedi to a Star Wars crotch shot. So we got the fight with Pintu and the thugs, and we talked about this a little bit, where, you know, Ahsoka waits to be asked and then kicks ass and crotches. So a couple things that jumped out to me was just how brutal this fight was, where you really felt the repeated punches in the face of Trace. How did the brutality of this fight grab you?
Great. I love the brutality. No, I love the brutality. I love the design. By the way, I just love the design of Pentu's thugs. Very almost like an ancient alien Egyptian. Like they built. Did they build the pyramids? Maybe they did. I love it. I love that. But I also, because you and I, we're not in the same place right now, but on my notes, I just wrote best crotch kick in Star Wars ? And that's the highlight. But I just love when Ahsoka jumps into the fight. There's a moment where she kicks like a box or something out from underneath one of their feet. And it's just like, this is a Jackie Chan action sequence. And I just loved it. Just on the surface, yeah. On the surface, forget all the meetings. I was like, go kick ass.
Yeah, and I think it was constructed in this fun way to have her be super impressive, right? To do those cool martial arts moves and to do them very fast. And there's almost, the music almost has like a little bit of whimsy. Like there is this great comic contrast of kind of just the knockdown, big swing slugging that's been going on and then sudden deadly acrobatic efficiency. And I like that it's almost played for comedy of like, yeah. No, you think Ahsoka's a badass, but this is how incredibly badass she is that it's almost funny from the outside.
I absolutely take it as a comedy scene along with all the big meanings and everything, because it starts, like I said, starts very brutal, starts with that plea for help and Ahsoka. So there's the big emotions. It is very much like one of those comedy movies. I'm trying to think of a great example, but just one of those like, all right, cut to bunch of bodies on the floor broken. Like, very funny.
yeah, exactly. So since we both noted the crotch shot, how did you feel about the crotch shot?
I loved it. I'm not one for Hans Moleman crotch humor all the time. I loved it. I also thought of the specific example. You know what the specific example is? It's the opening sequence of the Steve Martin movie Roxanne, where Rich Schneider and Kevin Nealon are walking up and they start insulting him and he kicks both their ass with a tennis racket. That is the scene. That's the specific example. I've got it. Now, crotch kick. There you go. That ties. I'm sure George Lucas, when this was first put up on a whiteboard, was like, oh, that's great. I love a good crotch shot.
Yeah, I think for me, it is one of those like, hey, remember everything Star Wars can do, from the heights of philosophy to a crotch shot for the kids. Why not?
And you're right. Star Wars goes all directions.
That's right. Sometimes foot's got to end up a place just for joy and fun. And so it did. The other part in this scene that jumped out to me is when Trace asks Ahsoka where she learned to fight like that, that she answers from my older brother.
Mm.
How did that hit you?
It hit me. It hit me right in the feels. And I know I was popping in our Force Center Discord server, which you can access from the Patreon page. And that got a lot of people too. Just one of those little digs, right? It's a wonderful, painful dig at us fans. Not dig at us fans like insult, but just like a digging into our heart.
Like into our heart.
How she feels. And the next time you watch their confrontation in Rebels, you'd be like, oh, man.
Oh, yeah. And it was interesting to me for a couple reasons. It feels like Ahsoka is trying to be honest without telling anybody. Yeah, I was a Jedi Padawan. I live in the temple. Because she says, I came from the top side. I'm not used to this. I learned this from my older brother. All of that is very Obi-Wan true from a certain point of view. So I appreciated her attempts at honesty.
Yeah.
And then the Padawan relationship gets discussed different ways, right? Anakin refers to Obi-Wan as, you know, something close to a father. And Obi-Wan says, you are my brother. And there's kind of back and forth of what that relationship is. But there's something so perfect of that relationship between Ahsoka and Anakin is exactly older brother, younger sister.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. It's a beauty there. So then we go on to Rafa's plans to repair and sell binary load lifters. There's a lot going on there. There's some laundromat negotiations and all that kind of stuff. And we eventually get to Ahsoka and Trace working on repairing the binary load lifters. And we get this conversation about people and droids, that they are good and bad. And sometimes they're both just crosswired. So first of all, in all of this sort of setting up the plot of the droids, was there anything in specific that you wanted to talk about or react to?
Anytime I can hang out with a binary load lifter and think back to 3PO and New Hope, I do enjoy that. A lot about the sequence as we start to dive into it, I was like, I wonder what Quill is thinking of this. Quill over in Mandalorian world.
Oh, yeah.
All about wiring.
Yeah, it's about undoing your own programming, mm-hmm. says Quill. What in the context of this episode, what did you make of, obviously Ahsoka's concern about droids is understandable, saying that these particular droids get crosswired, but then talks about, Trace says, you seem like you know so much. And she's like, I still don't understand people. And Trace says, well, just like droids, some are good and bad and some are crosswired. What did that description of humans mean to you in the context of this arc of Clone Wars or Star Wars storytelling in general?
It's so true, right? I mean, this is the truth here. All the Star Wars themes about programming and wires. I think it's interesting that this observation first comes from Ahsoka related to just droids, but Trace, and just so lessons come from everywhere, you know, she says this so directly and Ahsoka's living this. But it also speaks to me in the sense of I always say sometimes it sucks, but sometimes you just got to let humans be humans and not hold people to the flames for a lot of the choices because there's a lot of factors into it. And that to me is a path to forgiveness and letting go of hate and anger. Anakin Skywalker literally becomes crosswired. That to me is powerful that if Ahsoka starts to learn this lesson here now and already kind of feels it, I don't think there's great new insights. I think Ahsoka to me is a character who's a lot of her feelings are being confirmed. So now, of course, she's going to stand before Anakin or Darth Vader. And of course, I still believe that's that moment in Rebels with his eye exposed and his voice for a second being Anakin. I think it's all in her to look at him and be like, you're just a cross-wired human, man, and we can help you uncross those wires. I think it's, to me, very big, powerful Star Wars theme, but it's a big, powerful theme in Ahsoka's life, and it might start here or really take deep root here.
Yeah, I totally agree, and I think this moment made me start thinking about obviously Ahsoka and Trace are working through how they have really different knowledge and experiences, and they seem to like each other and instinctively want to help each other and be kind to each other, and they're kind of comparing notes. And I feel like that crosswired thing made me think of Anakin and the choices that you make, exactly as you so eloquently described. But then it made me also think that Trace is thinking of her sister Rafa, of like, she's not a bad person. She's kind of crosswired right now, where she's really making some dubious choices, but from her perspective, she has to, and I don't know what's exactly right. She's not good or bad. She's just crosswired right now. And it started to me to bring Ahsoka and Trace even closer together, because they both have these siblings who are maybe crosswired right now.
Well, this is great writing. This is great writing where I think the, these are obviously professional writers in a writer's room, and Filoni and George, and no surprises there, but I'm looking at myself. There could be a tendency to use Trace and Rafa on a one-way street to only serve Ahsoka's story. I love that you've pointed out several times now Trace is experiencing the same things, and that's why they're connected. They're equals. One has a lightsaber. One has a wrench. You know, and it makes the whole story just this robust tale. I love that.
Yeah. And so then we get to probably our most action packed scene, with all due respect to the crotch kick of binary load lifters gone wild. We both talked about liking just seeing the binary load lifter kind of lose it. This scene ends in obviously Trace successfully turning off the binary load lifter and Ahsoka using the force to save Trace. What spoke to you in this scene? What did you get out of this part of it?
I think number one, it showed for me that Trace had a lot of skills. A lot of it was, you know, Ahsoka riding on the floating forklift. And so I love that, just to show that Trace kind of knows what she's doing too, man. The kid's got some skills. But I love that. I love it shows the big risk, man. You talked about it up top. This Ahsoka knows, as she almost falls to her own death on her Harley Davidson speeder. You don't just reveal your force powers now. And this is before the fall of the Republic. Imagine how it's going to get. So it was a big moment of reveal. I love you got the Twi'lek kid just kind of going, looking over. So it all worked for me in that sense. And you know, there's, I don't know why I loved it, but when they stop the load lifter and it starts to do the slow fall, it's like, oh, it just wants to take a nap.
Yeah, I just really enjoyed, you know, these were the scenes where I feel like I really got to enjoy seeing 1313 and seeing the, you know, dark, low lit neon and still the little bit of traffic zipping around and all that, and just cool aesthetic of it. Mm-hmm. And then I love the droid being very Hulk like and being smashing. And then once Trace was on him, there was a real King Kong vibe. So it had a lot of great kind of Star Wars pulling from other, you know, genre things to create the visuals, all really cool. And then building up to, it feels like Ahsoka watching Trace, like Ahsoka could have hopped up there and turned that button off so easily. Right.
Yep.
But she hasn't been asked to help. And she's trying to just be a Jedi and wait and watch and only act when she absolutely has to. And so telling that she hasn't wanted to tell anybody that she's a Jedi, has been resisting using the Force, and then uses it when she absolutely has to. All really, really cool to let you know where Ahsoka is. Mm-hmm. But you mentioned this is before Order 66. Yeah. So I did want to ask you, what do you think is going through Ahsoka's head that she's like, don't want to let anybody know, don't want to show anybody?
Right, yeah, great point. Great, it's a great point, because Jedi aren't necessarily liked, but they're not hated down here by everyone, right? So I think it whether she has a sense of what could be coming, I don't know that answer, but I think it's telling that she wants no part of it at this point, and then and that's not her final answer. She's still working through this. She is creating that path for herself, as you said, or confirming some things. But isn't it kind of weird that she would be like, I don't want to reveal myself as a Jedi. I don't know what that is. I don't know what I am as that. So, and maybe I need to turn my back. You know, it's like, to me, she's still working through the details and the logistics of this big choice she made. I don't know. It's the way I kind of take it as, you know, the danger isn't from without. It might be from within.
Yeah. Oh, I think that's really well said, because I think there is, you can think of just the logistic things of like, well, what are people going to expect of me? Is that going to bring enemies out of the woodwork? You know, she's certainly been hunted by bounty hunters before, you know, not like there's an active price on her head that she's aware of, or that we, the audience, are aware of, but so that you can imagine some external things. But I do like the more internal of, I'm going a different path. I have to get by on my own. I don't want to show, I don't want to use I don't want to tap into the Force if I don't have to.
Yeah.
Is a really interesting emotional choice for someone like Ahsoka.
Well, it's because, again, the and just watching this episode long on the surface, you might be like, yeah, you got to hide. You can't be a Jedi. But then really, it's almost as if the last thing Ahsoka wants, she's not worried about a bounty hunter or a separatist coming after her. She doesn't want Obi-Wan to come after her. She doesn't want to deal with, I just cannot talk to Plo Koon right now. I don't want to be revealed as a Jedi.
Yeah. Yeah, me in my awesome jean suit just want to find our own path for right now. Yeah. And that the kid scene is just like, it's a great fun little detail, but to me, it does wrap around to this idea of like, what should a Jedi be? And it connects so much to Trace saying, they weren't what you hear these stories when you're a kid and they weren't what I imagined. Mm-hmm. And then that hope that little Twi'lek kid now has a story about a Jedi that's really, really good.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Excellent point, sir.
Yeah. Yeah. So hope. hope for the Jedi in the eyes of the Twi'lek. So a wrap, we have kind of just the wrap-up scene that Rafa sells the droids for double and gets a Pintu off their back, so Ahsoka doesn't have to kick any more crotches right now. There's the implication that that Ahsoka is going to just fix up her speeder and leave, but it seems like Trace, you know, would love to have her stay around. And then Rafa says some stuff about, or rather Trace says something, some stuff about Rafa. She doesn't always get it right, but she is trying to make things better for us. And that's where I really felt like there's no way Ahsoka is not listening to that, and absolutely hearing that is Anakin.
Mm. Yeah, I like that example. I like that thought that Ahsoka's, again, not just seeing herself. This isn't a lesson for Ahsoka. She's connected with this these sisters, and specifically Trace. Yeah. So, yeah.
Do you think that's it would be a fair analysis of where Anakin is at this point in the Clone Wars story? He doesn't always get it right, but he is trying to make things better for us.
100%. Look, I was trying to run down in my head the list of similarities just on paper, right? A little checkbox. And it's like Rafa and Trace and Anakin and Ahsoka. And it's like they all have some outside the box thinking. There's a connection where there's lessons go both ways, whether or not Anakin wants to learn them from Ahsoka yet or ever. But I think he has all through Clone Wars. You show that. And Trace has maybe more. Maybe she's a little bit of the older soul and the softer soul in this tough environment, but has to still needs that feeling of safety and protection from Rafa, just as Ahsoka has felt that and maybe feels the absence of that right now from Anakin. Not that she can't handle herself, but just that Anakin is that older brother figure for her. And I like this, the other idea that Trace, there's some moments that I sensed that Trace has to, maybe she realizes or will realize that she might have to grow past her sister and carve her own path, and maybe doesn't want to face that quite yet. And not that Roth is bad, or like I said, I do believe she's got the interest of them in mind, just as Anakin did. It's that final moment between Anakin and Ahsoka. Like, it's almost like you could feel he could be like, you know, I'm going to come with you. I'll walk away from the Jedi Order, but he's not there yet. And Ahsoka's not going to wait for him. Ahsoka cannot wait for Anakin to come to terms with who he is, or who he is with the Jedi or as a Jedi. She's got to go her own way. And maybe Trace will have that too. There just, to me, was a hint of that.
Yeah, yeah, I know. I think that's really powerful. So, yeah, we got great closing scene then of they have a lunch on the wharf, which honestly looked like the 1313 version of a Comic-Con taco place. Fish tacos.
You and I
on the wharf.
You and I both noted similar things in this episode from different sides of the city here. I just wrote food court. It reminded me, this is so weird. I used to love this show on NBC, and I think it went to TNT, called Southland. It was a, you know, gritty LA cop show. And they would go for lunch breaks at a taco stand and just kind of sit there. And I'm like, this is just like that. And they're just having lunch at a downtown food court or an outside market. I loved it.
Yeah, I felt like there was going to be like a moment where Trace was like, well, what did you get? And Ahsoka's like, Sbarro's. What did you get? Exactly. Oh, Taco Bell.
I went to Chinese Gourmet and got some plum sauce chicken. Yeah,
some plum sauce chicken and some Orange Julius.
Yes.
Yeah. So yeah, we leave. We don't know exactly what's next for Ahsoka or for Trace, but we know they're both in the same place with a complex relationship with their older siblings, and they both want to kind of get away from the Jedi and the Clone Wars in their own way, and they walk off into the not sunset, and that's the end of the episode. Any other characters or moments or beats that you wanted to discuss?
Yeah, we talked about a lot of the little tiny things, the classic Kenner figures, the food court stuff there. Now a lot of it there. I just really do love getting down onto the surface level of 1313, and now, if I was to play a video game of 1313, it wouldn't be a cool bounty hunter roaming around the criminal underworld. It would be like a Sims. And you got to go to the food court, get your binary load lifters back, and just try to survive.
just try to get by and maybe get sent on a mission to stop those crazy droids. We always like to talk about an action figure moment, that if we could have a figure from any character from the specific episode of Clone Wars we're talking about, who would we want? So what grabbed you? There were some actual action figures in this episode with those Cantina Gang figures, but who would you want?
So can we get a re-release of those Kenner figures as Clone Wars figures? Can we do that? I would think, as I'm staring up right now, I have the Black Series Infus Nest and her speeder and the Rey speeder Black Series, the 6-inch ones with scale. I want added to that Blue Jean Ahsoka on her burning speeder.
Yeah, there's just no other better action figure option, in my opinion, is Ahsoka in that new suit. You know, there definitely are Ahsoka action figures. I have a great two-pack of her and Rebels designed Vader that came out right around Force Awakens era. It's a great Ahsoka figure from her Rebels look. But man, would I love the Ahsoka in jean suit. And I often want the figures that have an action. So I would definitely want this one to be like you squeeze her arms and she does the crotch kick just straight out. Full power.
Crotch kick action.
Ahsoka with crotch kick action and jean suit. Yeah, that's definitely on my imaginary headcanon action figure wish list, maybe someday. So we always close out by having a moral. Each episode of Clone Wars has a moral, and each episode of our podcast, Clone Wars Report, has a moral. Ken, what's the moral of this episode of Clone Wars Report?
Well, the episode itself of Clone Wars is about when there's no path, you make your own. And what we learned today, the moral of our podcast is when the city locks you down, you can find other ways to record.
That is a beautiful moral. So for myself, for Ken, for Ahsoka, and for the Kenner action figure Cantina Gang, this has been the Clone Wars Report.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Welcome to Sincerely Sloan, presented by Uninterrupted. I'm your host, professional tennis player, wife, parent, and entrepreneur, Sloan Stephens. As an athlete and as a person, my journey has had a lot of twists and turns, from moments of adversity and doubt to unimaginable triumph and satisfaction. Throughout the season, I'm joined by some of the biggest names in sports, entertainment, culture, and a few members of my tribe. Our conversations keep it real and push it past skin deep. We reveal the perspectives, routines, and products that allow each of us to show up at our best. Join me on my journey of self-discovery and many, many laughs along the way. Sincerely, Sloan.
Ever Googled your own name? Prepare for a shock because your personal info, including addresses and phone numbers, is out there, especially with the recent hacks at some big phone and healthcare companies. But here's where Aura steps in. Aura scans the dark web for your sensitive information and sends real-time alerts. Aura also actively requests that your information be removed from data broker sites, putting you back in control. Aura provides you with a complete online safety toolkit. credit and transaction monitoring, a secure password manager, a privacy-enhancing VPN, and more. Try Aura risk-free with a 14-day trial at aura.com/safety. That's aura.com/safety. Rest easy with Aura. Visit aura.com/safety today.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.